Front Street and Sergeant Bluff.
The survival of the fittest. And besides, it's fun.
Outdoors with John is on the air. This is the Hunting, Camping, and Fishing Show, presented by Northwest Iowa Outdoors, the region's number one outdoor entertainment multimedia outlet. Live from the KSCJ studios in Sioux City, the phone lines are wide open. Call 239-2101 right now with your questions or comments.
Good morning, everybody. The show is brought to us by the City of Kingsley, Small Town Sportsman in Kingsley, Dirt Road Design and Screen Printing in Kingsley, The Shooting Shop in Anthon, Iowa, the Plymouth County Conservation Board, Skyline Lodge in Perrault Falls, Ontario, Iowa Great Lakes Outdoors in Milford, Iowa, Stan's Bait Shop in Milford, and Midwestern Land and Auction in Mapleton, Iowa. Well, there's 9 episodes left for people to send us a good outdoor story or a bad outdoor story or any kind of an outdoor story, or take part in the show in any way, and we'll get you entered for the giveaway for the Heritage Rough Rider Revolver. We will be doing that the first show of December, which I think is probably December 7th. And so last week at the end of the show, I apologize to Steve. Steve, if you're listening this week, can you call back, because we got cut off right at the end of your story, which was actually getting pretty good because they were on the golf course and the second moose had just showed up. And I'm not sure what happened after that. I don't know. It's pretty interesting. But anyway, Steve, if you can call back in, because we didn't get your information either as far as your name and your address or phone number to get you entered in for the drawing. So if you can call back, Steve, we'd really appreciate that. Or if anybody else wants to call in and get entered, 239-2101. And then also there's an email that you can read, I guess, if they email us a story during the show, Scott.
Yeah, it's kscjweekends@gmail.com.
And then that way you can email us the story, and then we'll read it on the air. But it has to be live during the show here. Otherwise, neither Scott or I will actually be able to see an email or a text message. If you want to text us at 712-239-2101, that would be good, too. Let's see. We don't really have anything for the show today, so it would be a good show, good chance to get called in. And, you know, we won't cut you off this time. We'll put you right on. So anyway, let's get right to our trivia question here. And we've been cleaning out Scott's prepper cupboard with the prize pack. Do we know what we got today, Scott?
We have a can of Spam chosen at random.
Just random?
At random.
Ooh. And there's like 7 different types of Spam you had over there in your prepper closet.
Yeah, I think I have like 8 or 9 different flavors.
Yeah, so yeah. One of the deals, though, is when you win the trivia and you win the can of Spam, call back and tell us how you consume that. If you come up with a new recipe for Spam, that would be awesome.
Oh, sure.
I know my wife likes to take the Spam, and she takes it's like a Parmesan cheese noodle thing, and then dices the Spam up in it. And I was reminded of that dish because the other day I was foraging for something to eat, and I grabbed that Parmesan cheese noodle thing out of there and was going to consume it. And then, I was quickly corrected that was waiting eagerly for our can of Spam that we have there. But, hey, next week we will return with another episode of No Stone Unturned. And our minions will be visiting the Effigy Mounds National Monument in Harpers Ferry, Iowa. And that is just north of the U.S. Highway 18 bridge, right along the Mississippi River, where the Upper Iowa River dumps into it. And, you know, that it's an interesting thing. I've heard about these effigy mounds for years. I've never been there. We're going to hear all about them next week. And I guess there's over 200 mounds there, and there's 20 of them that are by 20 different associated tribes as far as building those, which is pretty interesting. But anyway, looks like we got Don on the line. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, John. I have a question for you. I've wondered my whole life. I grew up on the Maquoketa River.
Yeah.
Manchester, and of course we fished the Maquoketa all the time. In the springtime, south of town, about, 5 miles or so, the stripers would run below the water gauge.
Yeah.
And you'd catch, you know, tons and tons of them.
Yeah.
And when they were done, you never caught another one. And I never caught a striper anywhere in the river except there, and even fishing Lake Delhi, never caught a striper. Why in the hell was it just one spot that you could catch stripers? I just always wondered about that. They got to be in the whole river, don't they?
Well, yeah, one would think. I know, and I'm not real sure over there. I know, like, like the Des Moines River, that, because the Iowa DNR had stocked those in the reservoirs in and around Des Moines.
Uh-huh.
And the stupid things would always go down over the spillway, and they'd leave the reservoir and end up in the river system, and they would never go back to the lakes. So I don't know what the deal is with that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that last show I listened to. I want to see if John's ever heard of that, because it was always about the time the lilacs were blooming. You go down below the water gauge south of town by the park and wade out in the sandbar, and there was a deeper, you'd catch them one after another, and nice-sized stripers.
Yeah.
But I just wonder why fishing that whole river anywhere else.
I don't know if it just has something to do with them trying to head up that river to spawn or something, because they're... I trust the ones that you were catching were probably the hybrid, either the wipers, the white bass, and the striped bass. They weren't, although the ocean striped bass does make its way up into the freshwater streams to spawn.
Yeah, and these are white, yeah.
I wonder if they have that same kind of a trait that they're doing there.
Yeah, I always thought that was really strange, because, I mean, we used to fish Turtle Creek down there by Delhi Dam all the time for crappies and stuff, and never once caught a striper.
Yeah.
In all those years.
Huh.
So, yeah, that maybe I should ask Alexa.
Well, she'll lie to you.
Yeah.
And then the answer you get will make you want to have to impeach Trump. So
yeah, I hear that.
Maybe. Well, we should. I mean, damn it. And you know what? And if we all vote for Bernie, that problem will be solved, because, you know, if somebody else catches some white bass and you don't,
stock them everywhere for us.
He'll have to give you half of his white bass, you know that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it works.
Yeah, no kidding. So.
And anyway, hey, I'll look into that, Don. Maybe I can find out something
from that.
I listen
pretty much every week.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I can either find out some information on that, or I can lie about it.
Yeah. I've just always been kind of curious. I think to myself, why in the hell would you catch them in about 100-yard space.
Yeah.
The lilacs are blooming, and never, ever again in the whole river.
Yeah, I would trust it has something to do with a pre-spawn feeding frenzy. Because I know I've got some farm ponds that I fish that I can catch crappies in the spring for a couple weeks, and I can usually catch them sometime during the winter during a couple of weeks, and then the rest of the time you swear they're extinct. But where are they going? They're in a farm pond.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and it was always a busy week, because at the same time the mushrooms were popping, so we were picking mushrooms and fishing for stripers.
Oh yeah, spring is a great time of the year.
Yep. So okay, you guys have a good one.
All right, thank you, Don.
And go Hawkeyes tonight.
Yeah, they kind of struggled last week.
My word, yeah, that was awful.
I don't know. They figured they'd try like the Cornhuskers and win the game without scoring actual points.
Yeah.
Worked for the Cornhuskers, but didn't work so well for the Hawkeyes, did it?
No, it didn't. I think they're both probably in trouble tonight, because Minnesota's good, too.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you guys have a good day.
You bet. Thanks, Don.
Yep, bye-bye.
Okay, well, on the trivia question here, what I'm looking for is how much did the heaviest white-tailed deer on record weigh? We're looking for either 340 pounds, 440 pounds, or 540 pounds. And to be honest with you, all three of those weights sound quite ridiculous to me. You know, people like to, the number for that is 239-2101. And how much did the heaviest white-tailed deer on record weigh? 340, 440, or 540 pounds? And the average white-tailed buck is going to weigh about 150 to 300 pounds. And it depends on really the subspecies, because I don't know, there's arguments on that too. People are one, you know, as far as how many actual subspecies of whitetail there are. A lot of them, they think, well, maybe it's a different subspecies of deer, but they know that the diet has a lot to do with the size of them, because the deer that they get in on northern Ontario and Canada and there and northern Minnesota tend to be a little bit bigger than they do with the deer that are around here, and quite a bit different than like the Carolina coastal deer and some of the whitetails they find down into Mexico and Central America. And whether or not there's 30 to 40 subspecies is really kind of unknown. The average mule deer is going to weigh about 120 to 330 pounds. And they say that the mule deer on average are probably bigger than the whitetails, but it depends on there again. If you buy into the 30 to 40 subspecies of whitetail, some of the more northern whitetail species obviously are going to outweigh these mule deer. And there's about 10 subspecies of mule deer with the black-tailed deer that they find in on the Pacific Northwest down through California is the most widespread. And we're still looking for a correct answer there. It's 239-2101. How much did the heaviest white-tailed deer on record weigh? 340, 440, or 540 pounds? And up for grabs is a can of Scott's Prepper Spam. Now, let's see. Events coming up this afternoon and evening. The Hillview Fall Festival is taking place up at Hillview Recreation Area west of Hinton, Iowa. And the festival market will be open from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Center for Outdoor Learning. And the spooky hikes up there will start at 8 p.m. And people need to meet at the picnic shelter on the south side of the park to take part of the spooky hikes. The haunted hike will be starting at 7:30 at that same location, and it will last till 10 p.m. Trick-or-treaters can park either on the north side or the south side. Both campgrounds will be open for trick-or-treaters, and they can just park anywhere along the road on the leading on the way in. And they can trick-or-treat the campers there, and the campgrounds are packed. And they usually have a huge crowd up there. Is usually quite a few. It's quite a sight to see. But they got quite a few people at the festival market too, and that's all handcrafted products there. Soaps and different food items and things like that. It's a pretty neat deal. The big gun show at the convention center. I just wonder if Beto O'Rourke will be at this gun show. That'd be kind of interesting. It'd be nice to see a guy like that at the gun show, kind of telling everybody that's at the gun show that he's going to come and confiscate their firearms. Boy, I tell you what, that just seems like just a bad idea. We had a news story that Charlie shared with us earlier this morning about DeSoto Bend being opened up to more big game hunting. Wouldn't bet your wagon on that's going to be the great deal that it sounded like, because back when they did the light geese conservation order, where the feds decided that they needed to reduce the number of snow geese around by loosening the hunting regulations and limits and basically set up the spring snow goose hunting season, they also at that time told the national refuges that they had to allow the light geese hunting. Well, what they did at DeSoto Bend and what I heard on any of the other national refuges like that is they set up specific blinds, and you had to show up, and then the groups had to draw for a blind. You would sit in that blind and you could not move from there. And they had certain ranges where if you knocked down a goose up to a certain distance, you could go get it yourself, and then you had to get somebody. And it was basically a joke too, because you could take, I think, my brother and I went down there and took part of this, you know, because it's like, oh, geez, we're going to go down there to DeSoto Bend, and we're just going to whack the crap out of all these snow geese. And it was like kind of like Barney Fife hunting, you know, where you could take in like three shells, you know, and you had to put them in your shirt pocket. And then when you got back, you had, and then they'd pull you off the blind there about 11 o'clock, too. So it was, I don't know, it was kind of a fiasco. you had to fill out a report if you fired a shot, you know, what you shot at and why you shot at it. And I don't know, I fired around just because, and that's what I put on my my report, was I fired the shot just because I thought everybody there needed to be woke up a little bit, because we had spent the whole morning not seeing a damn goose. But anyway, and I think the opening up to deer hunting is going to be the same way. It's going to be a pretty controlled hunt. They're going to tell you where you can sit, and you are not going to move from that spot. And if you kill a deer or cripple a deer, you're going to have to go get the park staff to go get it for you. Anyway, looks like Scott's off the phone now. We must have gotten an answer this time.
Yeah, Chris Hurlbert of Elk Point, South Dakota, correctly guessed 540 pounds.
That's a huge deer. Consider most of them are, most of what they shoot around here, you know, people, they're always claiming they're shooting, you know, 400 or 500 pound deer, and it, you know, they're liars. You know, guys lie about the size of things pretty bad. It's like the guys are catching a lot of 15-pound bass around here, not taking into fact that they need to weigh 5 before they can make it to 15.
Well, you know, I'm thinking that deer probably ate a lot of Golden Corral.
You think? I don't know. I don't know what he had. Maybe he had elephantitis or something. There's some kind of a... But anyway, yeah. They knew that it field dressed at 431 pounds. And they estimated its live weight then to be 540, you know, taking into the amount that the guts and stuff like that that you leave behind would have weighed. And it was killed in 1977 in Ontario, Canada. And the largest mule deer was killed in 1938 in Colorado. And there again, they had a field dress weight of 410 pounds, and they estimated its live weight then to be 523 pounds. Evidently, mule deer must have more guts than whitetails, according to these equations. So,
well, for correctly guessing, he wins the highly coveted copper coin, a few other things, and of course the can of Spam picked at random, which is hot and spicy.
Hot and spicy, yeah. Spam. Awesome. Well, anyway, we're way past due for that commercial break. We better pay the light bill here.
It's fall discount day at Baumgart.
Today only.
Get 17% off everything in stock.
With a few exceptions, including items already on sale.
Check this week's flyer or go to Baumgart.com for details. We even extended store hours so you can't be late. Open all day today from 7:30 to 8. And 17% off gives you a reason to start on your list for the holiday season. With Toyland, clothing, power tools, pet supplies, and more. You'll find gift ideas for everyone at 17% off throughout the store. That's today only at Baumgart's, with everything you need.
Right when you need it.
At 17% off.
What you need when you need it at Baumgart's.
Hear the disheartened. See the hurdles and barriers, the complex, the impossible. Then choose instead to follow the dreamers. Challenge what could be and what should be. At Children's Hospital and Medical Center, science and heart are leading us to even greater breakthroughs and the very best in pediatric specialty care, improving the lives of children and improving the future of medicine, providing the highest quality pediatric specialty care and expertise in the region, advancing research to discover new treatments and cures, educating tomorrow's experts, and advocating for the health and well-being of children, families, and entire communities. Giving all we have to improve the life of every child. To find a physician for your child, call 1-800-833-3100 or visit childrensomaha.org. When children are your everything, anything can be.
Big John. Big John.
Every morning, well, mine, doesn't look like we've got anybody on the line there that wants to tell a story, so maybe it'd be a good chance for me to get this news item I've been sitting on for a while. It's from CBS News, so yeah, that's probably about a 50-50 chance whether or not it's true. So But anyway, a man was caught trying to smuggle 34 birds into the U.S. on his carry-on luggage. 34 birds. That's a Connecticut man was caught at JFK International Airport in New York City with dozens of live birds in his carry-on luggage. The U.S. Attorney's Office said Francis Gurahu, I think that's how you pronounce it, 39, was traveling into the U.S. from Guyana in northern South America. Airport employees discovered 35 live finches in his carry-on bags. Each bird was hidden inside a plastic hair curler with a screen attached over the end. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, finches are used in singing contests in Brooklyn and Queens, and individuals bet on the birds with the best voice. Gurahu said he planned to sell the finches for about $3,000 each for a total of about $100,000. That is crazy. I can't imagine paying $3,000 for a stupid little bird. That's unbelievable. But anyway, well, at least you had them. I don't know. How do you keep 35 birds quiet? I'm just wondering how you figure you're going to pull that one off.
There was also a story recently about a guy that tried to smuggle a lot of turtles into the country. Maybe he had like 35 turtles
or
something.
Yeah, the turtles.
He had them taped to his legs.
Yeah. Well, at least the turtles would keep quiet.
Yeah.
I mean, and they don't say much.
No.
But birds? you're smuggling these birds that you used in singing? And I've never heard of this. In Brooklyn and Queens, and if that's the only place where they use these finches for a singing contest, well, that's just kind of crazy. I don't know. Hey, you know, when they take away dog fighting, that's maybe what these people do. They smuggle these little damn birds into the country and make them sing. Huh. I don't know. I thought that was crazy. And it might not be true. Like I say, it was from CBS News. So anyway. Hey, another story I saw, and it was, I got time for this maybe. New York became the first state to ban cat declawing. The cat declawing a cat is already illegal in much of Europe, as well as in the cities of Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Denver. But New York became the first state to ban it statewide. Supporters of the ban include animal welfare advocates, cat owners, and veterinarians who argue the practice is cruel and barbaric since it involves the amputation of the cat's toes back to the first knuckle. Well, I don't think these people notice how cruel and barbaric not declawing the cat can be. If they ever knew my Uncle Don, they would know this. Because when he come home and found that couch shredded by that cat took a... Oh, I think the cat would be thinking, damn, I wish they would just amputate my toes back to the first knuckle and what this guy did to me. But anyway, the New York State Veterinary Medical Society has opposed the bill, saying the procedure should be allowed as a last resort for felines that won't stop scratching furniture in humans, or when the cat's owners has a weakened immune system, putting them at greater risk of infection from a scratch. Medical decisions should be left to the sound discretion of fully trained, licensed, and state-supervised professionals, the society said. Huh. So now they're going to set up cat-declawing cops in New York.
up against the wall.
You betcha. Drop the 30-ounce soda, but keep that blunt in your mouth, and damn it, where's that cat's claws? It's just crazy, crazy. But anyway, people who violate the ban could face fines of up to $1,000. Awesome. All right. Well, till next week, folks, thanks for listening.
Well, when you gotta go, you gotta go.
CBS News up.